What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I hope you're all enjoying your week. Coming up on today's show, the rumors about a fight between Ian Garry and Colby Covington are swirling, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it. Plus, I'm going to give you my opinion of Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. And I'm also going to talk about what's going on with one of the heroes of the sport, Mark Coleman. All of that is coming up on today's episode, but first, I want to check in on the latest happening with some of the biggest stars our sport has to offer. Guys, this story is out there, so if you'd like to correct me in the comments, go ahead. I'm admitting up front that I'll probably get you 90%, but I'm also admitting that there's 10% that I could be corrected on. But before you go and correct me, and the reason I'm comfortable just coming and talking to you about it anyway without getting those facts straight, it's not the point. John Jones put a fan in the hospital. Do you guys know about this? Okay. So, and that's the part. Why am I giving this story a little bit? It's actually not the point, which is why I don't have to be fact-checked on this. Some fan gets the attention of John. If I was to guess, he's like an internet personality. This is going around. One thing about internet personalities, they don't have an autonomous thought. They will not come up with anything creative. They will see somebody else do it, and then they will go and copy it. And that's fine. I'm just sharing for you. There was some Jay Brown called Sneakers that went and did this with Sean Strickland 2 weeks ago. Now, setting that aside, set the scene. Here's John Jones. He's in front of people. However many he's in front of, whatever this event is, he's here and all the people are back here. Some guy gets the attention. Some guy stepped forward. He went kicked in the leg. John warns him a few times. And after being encouraged just the right way, does the kick. But, boy, he does it nice. John Jones was trying to be nice. There was a point to prove, sure, there's a little ego, sure there was. John didn't act like that. He smiled and laughed like he was getting through it and being part of it. And this has always been a tough spot from the beginning of time. Like, I think that if you're reasonable, you can just stop right there and say, there's nothing to see. Great job by John to even invite and allow somebody that came. Somebody has a dream. They have a dream to deal with the champion of the world and film it. And they want to do it in the form of a lake. This is their dream. And John gave it to them, right? Like, if you came away with any other conclusion of, that was a pretty cool move, John. But some people will not. Some people will not. Just like they did with Strickland. Say he didn't have the right, shouldn't have done it. What a terrible thing to do. Hope the police get involved. All right. Now, when I tell you, I'm diverting from this, but I want you to have this in mind. That this has been a thought and a problem from day one. So, professional wrestling, right? And you will learn all you need to know about the world, particularly government and politics, if you follow the history of professional wrestling. But before they drop the fourth curtain, okay, where they let you in on the gag that this is entertainment and not competition, before they did that, they stuck very true to the idea that it was, in fact, a resistance. That the opponents were not cooperating with each other. And the promoters of what they had territories back then. The promoters would tell the guys pretty consistently, you can go out on the town if you want. But if you get in a fight at a bar and you lose, you're fired. And let them know that. There would be fans that would interrupt wrestling matches. They would jump over because something was happening to the good guy. And the bad guy was getting away with it. And it just drove him crazy because the referee was knocked down. And he was looking in this direction. And he didn't even see him with the steel folding chair. So he's going to get involved himself. Wrestlers, good, bad, the one you came to help, the one you came to hurt, will all team up in that one moment. And they'll kick the crap out of that fan. But they have to. Or at least they believe. Because their business, their entire livelihood will be exposed in that moment should this random fan get the best of one of the boys. So it's one of these interesting ideas. Matt Hughes was the first really tested in our sport. There was somebody that asked Matt Hughes to choke him out. And so Matt came behind and choked him out. Now, one thing that will happen, I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I swear to God, I forget it all the time. I've got to be reminded of it all the time. What you guys see, if you've never played with this, to tap out, where you see that looks very natural, that is not a normal, the same way as you might have to learn an arm bar or the right techniques on where your hip go to get a triangle choke with the right pressure, you have to learn to tap. It is not natural. You want to know what natural is? Ah, natural is a verbal. It is not natural to tap. Now, the reason I say that, when Matt Hughes puts this guy in the choke, this guy knew so little about this and was so under-experienced that he just didn't know to tap. Matt would have stopped in a second. And Matt, while doing what the guy asked, is assuming that the guy is just fine because he's yet to tap. I got to get reminded of that too all the time. It's not a natural thing to tap. But at any rate, the guy that Matt Hughes puts the choke doesn't tap. He's in danger and he wants Matt to stop, but Matt doesn't know. Right, his back's to him. He's not looking at the guy. I share this with you because the guy woke up and promptly went and got himself a lawyer and sued Matt. So it has always been a tough position. I got put in to one of these. I'm going to save that thought before I personalize it. Let me go back to John specifically. This gentleman is not the first of which to try to do something to engage John Jones with the hope of video in it to either embarrass John or to put themselves over. First time that I saw it happen to John, it's one of John's most impressive athletic moments. By the way, he's never gotten credit. Nobody's really understood what happened here. John showed up to a grappling event. He was going to sign autographs. He was just a guy. It was like a UFC expo. There was 20 different things going on, and amongst them, one of those things was a grappling tournament. So John's overdoing whatever he's doing. I want to say he was even with a tire company, like car tire. I think he was with Toyo. Whether I've got that detail right or not, a guy from the grappling comes up to John. Now, John's hungover. I mean, not for nothing. He'd been out drinking. He got an obligation. He gets up around noon. He stumbles into this thing. He's doing his whatever. He hasn't weighed in. He hasn't prepared. There's not. I mean, to go on and on about how much John was not in that mode. This guy was in that mode. He trained for it. He weighed in the day before. He registered. He'd warmed up. He'd even competed that day. He's 100% ready. Not to mention he's a brown belt. Walks right up to John and challenges him to a match. A brown belt. In jiu-jitsu, challenges John to a competitive match. John went out there and did it. He went out there and did it, and he played and didn't take it serious and humiliated this guy. Therefore, he got no credit. That was easy for John. The fact that that was easy for John, everybody else that knew anything about grappling is going, and he's never been challenged again, okay? He's never been called out again. But this is one of those very interesting spots. And I don't think this guy's going to lawyer up. But if any of my premise is right, if this guy is in fact an internet personality of any degree, well, then of course he'll lawyer up. The mere fact that he's at the hospital and you know shows that this is all an experiment for attention. So if that hospital attention dies down, of course you then go get legal attention. Like, that's just what he'll do. I could have this guy completely wrong. That could be Joe Schmo didn't know anything about kicks. Somebody else filmed. I mean, I've admitted to you guys that I don't have all of these details. I came to great concern, one, that he was the level of wimp that needed a hospital overlay. I mean, not for nothing. You put some ice on it, or better yet, you don't do anything, okay? You don't even tell someone that my leg hurts. You just, right, you go on about your life. The mere fact that he needed a hospital, the fact that we know it is a concern for me. How would we possibly know? How did that possibly get out unless he put it out? So if he is the kind of guy that would want to, believe me, you don't want that kind of attention. You do not want the attention that you got a little baby leg kick that you requested. And it hurt you so bad, you had to go to a hospital. Not I saw a doctor, not I called somebody on the... He went to a hospital! You don't want that kind of attention unless you're that kind of guy. And if you're that kind of guy, yeah, of course, a lawsuit's next. The great Conor McGregor. And what makes you great, by the way? When we're talking about politicking, when we're talking about understanding how to maneuver and manipulate behind the scene to have your ideas interjected in the final decision. When we talk about the greats, what do I mean, guys? How do we judge that? What's the litmus test? That your idea is the one they end up going with. That's it. That's it right there. What's a good politician? Well, he's honest, and he goes through the White House doors. He does what he says he'll do, and he'll... No. It's a guy who campaigns, and no matter how insane or wonderful you think his ideas are, he gets elected and then gets it done. I mean, I'm just sharing with you, right? Like, there is a test. So, Conor McGregor, right? And I'm waiting to see. I'm waiting to see if the great magician's got one more underneath his sleeve. Conor is not in the same position as he's usually been. Conor can generally stare at the board. He can stand back from 40,000 feet, as they like to say in an expression, but then he can see everything so clearly, as opposed to being so close to the trees that you can't see the forest, right? I'm using adages here, but Conor's not in that same 40,000 foot situation, because when he sees what needs to be done, he does not have the same flexibility to maneuver. For example, his next fight in the octagon will be against Michael Chandler. Now, that's a great opponent. Michael Chandler is wonderful. To make a point, though, that could have been anybody. What I'm attempting to say is Conor can't change the opponent. If there's some piece of the story or some piece of the market or some piece of the miss that Conor could interchange that, he's been very good his entire career to pick his opponents, whether it's changing weight classes or it's changing sports completely. But in this situation, he does not have that flexibility. His next match will be against Michael Chandler. So he's still got to get what he wants. He cannot get a title fight out of Michael Chandler, for example. Not that he wants one. I'm trying to show you that we got a little constraint here by the great magician. And because he cannot get a title fight, he's going to have a very hard time getting a main event on a pay-per-view. Now, it can be done. Of course it can be done. It could just be the number one contender match, right? Can't get a title fight, so we just back it off one step. That's generally the order you would go in. You would start with the best, and you would begin to work your way down the night. And it's not a number one contender's match. So, how do you get that main event spot? How do you possibly be a main event spot, which is designated? And don't forget, being the champion or even the number one contendership, the reason that that's your order is not because that belt is so valuable on a poster or that the next best thing is great for talking points for the guys over at ESPN. The reason the belt and or the number one contendership is so valuable is because you're telling a story that's just one step of it is tonight. For the next part of the story, you then tune in for the next one. Right? You get people hooked on a book, and you're taking it one chapter at a time. But if that first chapter, if you didn't need that at all to enjoy chapter two, then people would just read chapter two. And if you don't need the first two to enjoy number three, they're going to start 80 pages into the book and save themselves a few steps. So it's a very important thing to do. And the reason I'm choosing to point that out so strongly is I don't believe Conor McGregor would fight anybody else but Michael Chandler. Now, that's subsequent to the fact that he doesn't have a choice. There will be no other option. He will fight Michael Chandler or he will not fight. What I'm saying is, if that was an option, I'm not sure that Conor wouldn't just take Chandler. Like, I don't think Conor in his heart actually wants to cut Chandler out of this equation. Conor at his heart, which is actually a lot nicer heart than you know. It's a lot more of a sportsman than always gets discussed. He is well aware that Red Panty Night is real, and he's also well aware this guy's got it. The same as Conor's gotten some deals because the agreement got done. He would never, Floyd can never pull out. What are you doing? You already said yes? Even if you find a better option, you already said it's me. Conor wouldn't do that to Chandler, is my belief. But I do want to share with you that within those two fighting brings a tremendous problem, which is they're fighting about nothing. And that doesn't mean we can't have fun. It doesn't mean that's not a good, sizable fight. I'm just sharing with you, within the organization they fight for, that's not who gets top billing. So if you're standing back and you're looking at the board and you're realizing, God, we got one miss here, which is we're fighting about nothing. We had an opportunity to make this personal, but that's long gone and we didn't take it. We did have an opportunity to do it for a belt. No matter how much people want to hear about 165-pound rumors, it just wasn't viable. And it's not a number one contendership. And quite frankly, we don't even know what weight class we're going to fight at because the other two things are true. Man, the fact that the weight class not only is not determined, it doesn't actually matter at all. Like none of you care at all what weight they fight at. But I'm sharing the fact that you're in that spot is what shines a light on my first two examples. Okay. So where I'm starting to believe that perhaps the great magician Conor McGregor does not have one under his sleeve is I'm starting to believe he's not standing back and looking at the board the way that he used to. I'm not certain that he understands what I just said to be the holdup. And the reason I'm not certain is when he does suggest other names, and I just gave you a whole 60-second diatribe on the fact that I don't think Conor would actually fight somebody else, but he has made those suggestions. He has gone on social media and made those suggestions to get a headline, to get a fire. He's done what Conor does. But those suggestions, whether it was Nate Diaz, whether it was Dustin Poirier, or whether it was George Masvidal, within those suggestions has the same exact problem. Which is a title would not be contested, but neither would an impactful contenders match for the title. And there is the holdup as to why Conor's having a hard time getting the main event, and he's not going to fight unless he can get the main event, right? Like, it's one of those things. So Conor's not giving up, by the way. He's come in. He's doing angles in the media. He's realizing, hey, you're expecting this to go into this. You're expecting a little bit of a bigger bounce here. So I got to do something so special in this game of checkers to cover the spread, to get you to make an exception, to put me on the top of the bill. I mean, this is what Conor's up against. And I'm just sharing with you, if anybody's got that card, it's him. But to pull that card or to manipulate any system, you must first intimately understand the situation. And based on the call-outs, based on getting into a car and crashing into the same wall over and over, I don't know if Conor does understand that. And that would be a big surprise. And I'm not certain that Michael Chandler has identified what the problem is. I'm not certain. Because Michael Chandler, while he does it on the down low, when he doesn't want anybody to know, is freaking smart at this game. He's really good at this. I miss Michael Chandler. I mean, he just came out of his shell when we put him on the bench. They threw to a cameo in him in Miami. He just like flexed his arm and looked cool doing it. I popped for it. He was like flexing his black t-shirt on, his hair. He just looks fantastic. Like but what I just said, that's what The Rock has, right? You could just throw to The Rock. He could do nothing. He could stand there and raise the eyebrow and the whole building goes like, Chandler's got this thing and we're keeping that thing on ice. And I do believe that if Chandler realized, oh my gosh, we're fighting about nothing, which is just fine, it's completely fine. They do 11 fights every Saturday. 10 of them are about nothing. But if you want the main event spot, if you want that top billing, that's the fight that has to be the most meaningful. At any rate, told you guys this weeks ago. Told you, I don't know who the skunk at the garden party is. Because I know Chandler wants to fight. I think Conor is sincere. And of course, the promotion would like their biggest star. And the promotion and Conor have yet to turn on each other and say who's holding it up. And I told you, I thought it was being held up. If I was in Dana's shoes, I can't main event him. No matter how much I like him, I can't do it. I have to be laser locked with an extreme discipline on the brand, who we are and what we are. And there are exceptions where I'll bring James Toney over. There are exceptions where BJ Penn called me, he needs another fight, man, I'm going to get it to him. There are exceptions. But there's never an exception for the main event spot. It's earned and it's coveted. And to give it to you, I have to take from somebody else. And there's policies. That is just not within the policy. You can't. seem to be two words that are best friends to Sean O'Malley. You can't rub elbows with Snoop Dogg socially. This is to an unfamous, skinny, big-haired kid from Arizona with no connections. When he made the claim, that's who he was. When he did it and put it on Instagram, that's who he was. You can't skinny, unfamous, big-haired kid from Arizona get onto the Contender Series. You cannot outfight and out-impress Dana White in comparison to the other contestants on the show that evening. You cannot get into the top 15 of the Ultimate Fighting Championships. You cannot begin your reign 5-0. You cannot go from number 10 to number 1 in one fight. You cannot beat, let alone stop, the greatest bantamweight of all time, Aljamain Sterling. You cannot get redemption over Chito Vera. You will not be able to defend this title. Couple that with the fact that you cannot main event pay-per-view. You cannot draw and you cannot sell out. Fifth largest gate of all time. I used to have the live gate record. Put this in perspective for you. But I used to have it. And there was a fight where it was St. Pierre versus Jake Shields. They did 11,000 seats in Canada. I'm not counting that one. No. I'm sorry. 11,000 seats, for goodness sakes. They did 40,000 seats and an $11 million gate. I'm not counting that one. Just, you know, it was just a one-off. Even George didn't do stuff. You know, there's just so many things that came to it. I'm throwing that out. And with throwing that out, then comes my statement of I was the highest. And I'll just go right into Medium, $8 million. It wasn't $8 million, but $8 million. And that was the highest. That was a record. That was a record. The red carpet was rolled out for me for being credited and being part of such a big gate. I mean, it really was. It was a very special number to have. I also had pay-per-view records. And I left as Conor came in. And I do not have any of those records anymore. Now, I do still have, if you throw out all of Conor's. So, the whole diatribe that I gave you there is just that I pay attention to those numbers. I know those numbers. I know them really well. I know them well enough to tell you who was in the lead, when I got beat, who I had to beat, what I had to throw out to make sure that the statement was true in the first place. I know a lot about them right off the top of my head. $14 million? $14 million? And you weren't a first time, like if you're a first time to a Providence or any municipality, you're going to get a big bump. This was Miami. Go to Miami all the time. They got all sorts of fighters in Miami. They got a hotbed out there. They got good boxers out there too. I mean, they're spoiled with fighting. They didn't need this. They didn't have to have this. $14 million? Anytime you're a first time. Okay, great. Otherwise, you got to go to the fight capital of the world. That's the way that works. $14 million? Do you know how many cards we've put two title fights on? The occasional three? Very few with three, but often two. They do not do those kinds of numbers. So I'm just sharing with you, you can't seem to inspire and work real well with Sean O'Malley. In fact, the only question that was left is what happens when people say you can. What happens when your buildup and your motivation is no longer to show everybody and stick it to everybody else, which will be reminiscent of the fact that Sean was the favorite. The audience and the Oddsmakers, which is really quite an awesome thing to come to, because they had evidence of this, right? These two had fought. These two had done the same thing at the same weight class. They came to a different result before this was heard in front of the Circus State Athletic Commission, but immediately in that night, oh, and by the way, even with the injury, without the injury, do whatever you want, there was still a performance prior to that. So you got a real good idea of where these guys stand. Sugar Sean did not call out, right? But he understood with Chito. He understood that this was going to happen, but he didn't call him out, and that's just different. Sean has called out everybody else. Everybody. He's been told he can't. Took all the pressure off him, put him in a great spot, went out there and performed. So this was the big test. What happens when they tell you you can? What happens when the pressure's on you because you're expected to win? And he had the best performance I've ever seen, period. And we're now back in this spot because my partners over at DraftKings have put out a hypothetical line, one of which will become the actual line and one of which will disappear from the page. They put out odds, O'Malley versus Topuria, and they put odds, O'Malley versus Merab. Both of which, O'Malley, the star, the $14 million live gate, didn't lose a single round. One judge even had it 10-8. Saturday. Okay. I mean, how the hell is Merab going to beat him? Now, you got the answer. I've got the answer, too. He's going to take him down and keep him there. This is the guy that was not, he was never taken down once on Saturday. So now all of a sudden, we're questioning a guy's takedown defense. He was never taken down on Saturday. I mean, that's just not generally how we do it. By the way, I knew Merab would be the favorite. Like, that's not a huge surprise for me. I'm just reminding you right now that all you've done with Br'er Rabbit here is put him back into the briar patch. All you're doing with O'Malley and kicking him and trying to take things from him, act like that win wasn't so impressive. Already move on with the new cycle, set him up, get him knocked down a notch. All you're doing is putting him right back where he loves to be. And Merab got worked up about this, by the way, which, not for nothing, huh? Is Merab turned into a great character or what? I mean, Merab went into a guy that was like thirsty for applause, thirsty for attention. Everybody goes through that phase, but he goes through this phase. And then he goes, he's a little bit gimmicky, and then he's out there trying. And somewhere within that process, instead of patting him on the back, he just became annoying. And now he's doing the same thing. He hasn't changed. He's doing the same thing. But there's a different look in his eye, isn't there? I see it too. And there's something very cool about it. There is something fun. How often do you get to use the word fun in a cage fight? There was a fun aspect to Merab. So Saturday was also Merab's big moment. He deserved a ton of credit. He took a fight. He fought 3 weeks ago. Over the best ever. You know how painful you're going to be if you got to fight a two-time world champion for 15 minutes? I mean, just think about yourself. Do you know the pain that you're going to be in? Merab was in the same pain he said he wasn't. He lied. He lied to get the fight. Flew out there, made weight, did his paperwork, got on that scale, and was ready to fight. He deserves a lot of credit for that. And he was about to get it. He was about to get his 15 minutes of fame. He was in the front row just waiting for it. Joe Rogan did his part, tease old O'Malley up, so O'Malley can say Merab's name. We flash the cameras down and Reed Harris either tells Cheater to come or tells him to stay back. They would have told him to come. Everybody knew this minute of the night was coming, and O'Malley took it from him. O'Malley took it from him. He knew what he was doing. O'Malley knows he's fighting Merab next. He took it from him just to be a dick. It was great. That's what you get, Merab. That's what you get for stealing his coat. You think he forgot? There's your receipt. Now we're even on the coat. But we still got to get to the fight. And Merab came up to O'Malley in the back. And Merab said to him, say my name. And it's a relevant line because I'm not sure that Sean knows why Merab said that. I think Sean thought like that was some level of trash talk. No. He was being very serious. Merab was being very serious. You had a microphone and you just built Ilia Topuria. Now people are questioning if it's going to be me. You got to say my name. He was genuinely bothered. This is why he approached him backstage, approached him to fight him or get some kind of promo going. The poor guy's hurting him to congratulate, but he wanted to give a message. Hey, you got to say my name. I'm your partner. I'm next. Which O'Malley did. He goes to the post-fight press conference. He made it clear, right? I saw O'Malley. I even yelled to him, good job, Sean. I was in a car, though. He didn't know whose voice it was. But I just want you to know, I saw O'Malley at 3 o'clock that morning. 3 o'clock is when I left. 3 o'clock, Miami time. That's when I left the arena because I was doing the post show. And so when I'm down in the loading dock, O'Malley comes out. Guys, he was in a wheelchair. He was having a hard time standing. You know, those legs hurt so bad. And I offer you that. I offer you a glimpse behind the scenes and I tell you that about O'Malley, which he might not want me telling people, but I do want to tell people, and I do want you to know he's in a wheelchair. And you want to know why? To go to a press conference, to be in that kind of shape and condition, you're hurting and you're hiding it in front of the world. And you're going to collapse, but you're not going to do it until you're alone and you're in private. And between that time, he called out two different guys. Oh, and by the way, they're both guys that, according to DraftKings, can beat him. That's how tough O'Malley is. Imagine calling out two guys that the world says can beat you. Imagine doing it. Two different weight classes. You're spreading around, man. Come one, come all. Anybody's got the best shot to beat me, that's the one I'll fight. Imagine that. I'll risk it all. I'll put everything on the line. Find me a man that could beat me. Imagine that when you're feeling good. Now try to imagine that you would do that when you know in your heart you can't even walk. And you'll still take the fight. You'll still sign because you know I will be able to walk in 5 months. Imagine that. Because that's what Sean O'Malley did. That's what the guy did that DraftKings says is going to lose his next fight. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Sean Strickland wants a rematch with Dricus du Plessis. Now, I got to tell you, do you still want that? Because when their fight ended, talking about Strickland, du Plessis. Just as we had predicted over here, the attempt was made to get Izzy versus the winner. In this case, the winner was Dricus. Top of the bill, UFC 300. Now, when that was happening, I had a sense, and I know that fight, I know that Izzy and Dricus, just because of how hot it got the first time, I know that they could turn that in to the absolute main event that you want. But that wasn't the question. The question that I asked you at the time is, does UFC have their thumb going in the right direction? Do you want to see Izzy versus Dricus? Right then, not with the build. Right then, did you want to see Izzy versus Dricus, or did you want to see Sean versus Dricus more? Knowing that the winner of that draws in to Adesanya, perhaps part of the story for down the road. And it was overwhelming. It was absolutely overwhelming. We had tens of thousands of you right on the YouTube page. You wanted Sean Strickland. One thing that we did not have a lot of fodder for the cannon loaded up by Sean Strickland. Sean thought that he won the fight, but he was gracious. Sean knew that he could be chosen for a rematch, just knew with the rankings and the guys he's beat and what the landscape was. But he didn't go after it. He didn't pursue it. And perhaps he did behind the scenes, for one. And also perhaps he did not because he, like us, was aware that they were going to take the champion and draw him in to Izzy. Perhaps. What I can tell you is that as of yesterday, Sean has come out, said, I want the match, and even tried to qualify it. He said, hey, it was a close fight. Can we all agree? Well, I'm the champion. When does the champion lose a close fight? Now, I get that that's not how the rules are, but I'm just saying he's making his point. Then he even brought in some support. He said, Dana White thought I won the fight, just for example. So, I mean, he's got me listening. I like that. I'd like some more of that. And I'm not convinced that Dricus is going to let that roll. I think that Dricus will respond. I think Dricus will be a great counterpuncher. I think he'll be a very good volley back and forth partner for you. But you got to tee him up, right? Like Dricus isn't going to go call somebody out when he's the champion. He understands now he gets called. That's one of those situations. Or I think if Sean Strickland really does want this and he starts really banging that drum, right, then then that's where the politics come in. And the politics also can come down to date. It can come down to geographical location. When Dricus du Plessis revealed for us, the audience, that he had turned down the main event slot at 300, he added for us, the audience, that he believes if they fight, I'm talking about him, Dricus, versus Izzy, if they fight in Africa, the mere fact that it's in Africa would be even bigger than it being a main event of 300. This is what he offered. Now, the reason I tell the story that way with that timeline, I don't know that they're going to Africa. I don't know that anything's booked in Africa. I'm not even hearing those rumors, but maybe he is. Right? Perhaps he is. Saying Africa's a bigger fight, I'm going to wait till Africa. If Africa's not on the board, and we could play that game all day. Like, I'll come back and fight somebody and we'll do it on Mars. Like, if we could do that, though, that would be a really big deal. Sure it would, yeah. What are we talking about it for? So, I mean, I say that just because if I am right that the reason Sean Strickland was reserved at coming out and making the proclamation that he wants the rematch and even deserves the rematch, if I'm right that the reason he didn't do that is because he heard company was going in the direction of Izzy du Plessis. They needed that date of 300. Then at the same time, if that's right, then the fact that Sean is now speaking up might tell us that Sean is now hearing that there is something the matter with Dricus versus Izzy. And the fact that he's keeping Dricus as part of this, thus calling him out, would mean that Sean specifically has heard there is a delay with Izzy. Now, that is speculation, but that is the way that this works, right? There's all sorts of clues if you've been around long enough. And these guys get sworn to secrecy, too. Hey, here's the information. Don't say anything. Hey, here's what's going to go on. Do not repeat it. And they don't, but they say something else, and then a smart mark like me comes and picks up. Okay, I know why you said that. Or I know why you avoided this. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. Like, Izzy's return for me is imminent. I didn't believe Izzy was retired and gonna wait and come back and do a striking match in 2027 any more than I thought that George Masvidal was retired the night he announced it. I mean, not for nothing, like, there's some that he's, come on, right? Sure enough, George is back and Izzy's in the gym and he's training, but we don't know if that delayed him or slowed him down. We don't know if I'm on the right trail at all. But I do like the concept and the idea of Sean Strickland starting to go out and fight for something. I think Sean Strickland is a master of the media. I think that he should manipulate it and leverage it. I think that people do want to hear from him. I think that Dricus du Plessis will respond to him. So we'll see where this all goes. But it looks like we're going to have a little bit of fun right now at middleweight. And still, no opponent or return yet for Chimaev. No confirmation or denial about the visa rumors that we hear. And I can't imagine there's a opponent out there for Jared Cannonier. So I'm just telling you, I'm starting to see these things come together. I think middleweight is a very fun and very competitive division right now. I like where these pieces are going to fall. Stick around. We're going to discuss this in the coming days. Gary, it just doesn't feel like one that you could unwind, right? It just doesn't feel like one that you could run back and rewind. And there's so much about it that I appreciate. I mean, Colby Covington has never been called out. Are you ready for that? Go ahead and Google that. Go ahead and search that. Go smear it in my face. Now, if somebody calls somebody out knowing full well that they already have a signed contract against somebody else, it excludes any sincerity. So I do not count it. With that said, I don't believe that's even happened to Colby, but I'm just sharing for you. If that happened, it excludes any sincerity, and I would not count it. Now, while I say nobody, I guess you'd have to call Gilbert Burns nobody, because Gilbert Burns has called him out. Gilbert Burns has called Colby out when Colby was on top, when Colby was in between, right? Not knowing where he's going to go, when other people weren't calling Colby out. I'm very sincere. I will give that to Gilbert. I will not take that from him. I like the idea. They're in Florida. I think that it's very similar. They were in the division at the same time. They were both number one contenders. When they were both number one contenders, they both thought the other one should be number one contenders. I'd be right. It's one of those things. So I'm all for that. And if I'm to tell the story honestly, Ian Gary now goes into the category of nobody. Ian Gary has now called Colby out and Colby has responded. It's very hard to run that back. It's very hard to have a live call out by a guy like Ian Gary and have a response by a guy as good at giving responses as Colby and then run it back. However, you are doing a grudge match. I mean, it is going to throw off the ebb and flow, right? I mean, just by example, what's the expression of the sport? You're only as good as your last match? Okay, well, if we're doing that, Colby lost his last match. If we're doing Ian Gary has won 15 straight, right? So Colby's last loss is 4 months ago, and Ian's undefeated hasn't lost in 25 years. Now, the only relevance there would be it can be tricky to get Colby back to a title fight. And I don't like saying that because I know how driven Colby is. I don't want to take anything from him. But it can be tricky. Like Colby being willing to go after the next generation with his beautiful record, taking a huge risk as a way of showing the world I can still beat anybody. I can beat any of them. I think it's great. I think that's really great, but that can be hard to get those actual matches because the decision makers are going to see that as well. They're going to think, why am I going to throw my 25-year-old unbeaten prospect out of whack, out of the line? And I also think there's an answer for that. Like, as impressive as it might sound when I say Colby lost his last fight and Gary's gone 25 years without being beaten, like that does sound really good, but Colby's also ranked 5 spots in front of Gary. So there is reason. All of a sudden, it does start to make some sense. Now, I want to get that out of the way, because I do feel, right, Colby is a very scary night. There's some guys that are hard nights. There's some guys that are tricky nights. There's these different words. But Colby's a scary night because Colby's going to hurt you. For sure. He's not going to try to do anything else but hurt you. He's not going to try to submit you. He's not going to try to make you pass out. Stretch your arm and make you say, okay, he's just not going to try those things. He's going to try to control you and beat you within the confines of the time limit. He will hurt you for 15 minutes or he will hurt you for 25. If there's a stoppage somewhere in there, it wasn't on purpose. Like that was no part of Colby's plan. His plan is to control you while he's bludgeoning you. Recontrol you while he's bludgeoning you. He doesn't get tired of it. I'm just saying like that's a scary guy to face. So I do want to give Gary his credit. Also, if you're just trying to turn the page, if you're trying to turn the page on the WAG and the book, and if that's what you're trying to do, and it looked as though Gary, which this is the most frightening thing in his life, how am I going to deal with a few people on social media, right? I mean, it did appear that way, but he is now the one keeping it around. By calling out Colby and stating the reasons that you're calling out Colby, Ian Gary is keeping around the very subject that we thought was going to crumble him. And see, that changes everything. If all we're doing is looking at this and we're trying to look cool, right? This is junior high. How do I get egg on my face and still look cool? Well, I can't cry and run. I know what I can't do. But what can I do? Right? And there's ways where you're getting the egg off and you look at the cute girl and you just try to roll with it a little bit more. And I'm just sharing for you, if Ian Gary keeps the subject around that we thought was going to crumble him, and it is now his doing that makes it a narrative, he's now in charge. He wins. It is over. He wins. It was my suggestion 101 from the beginning. You never run from something. You steer into it. So you got to set that on hold just a little bit, but in many ways it's important that Gary stays on this and gets the match for that reason. Now, that's still going to be out there. They're still going to park, They're still going to park the WAG in the front seat, and they're still going to do a cameo as he kisses her on his way to the check-in center. I mean, it's still going to be part of the show. Then it sure would be helpful to get a win there, but a lot of pressure. And we like that as fight fans, don't we? It's the one that the average promoter misses, but the great promoters understand. An average promoter will call a good guy with a big name and say, hey, man, behind the scenes, hey, man, I'll give you an easy fight. I'll give you a bunch of money. I'll give you an easy fight. And then wonder why that guy couldn't draw, why he didn't do better. Because promoters always miss. It's not just about one guy looking good. There needs to be a separation. There needs to be a gap. So if one guy just stayed here, he didn't look anybody, but this guy's whole career could come to an end, boom. Now you got a marketable fight. If one guy can really spring up and another guy can drop, right? One guy goes to a title fight and one guy goes to retirement. But you don't have any bigger fight than that right there. Any two guys under contract, you pick them at random. If that's the story going in, one guy goes for a title and one guy is never seen again. Boom. It works. Any two guys you want to do, that story works. And I only share for you, it's an interesting match. It really is. And Colby has come out and he's responded. He's on a yacht. Did you guys see this with Colby? It was just great. It was just great. People don't understand what Colby's doing, but they're starting to. There's only been three guys to do it. Colby, who got three title shots by doing it. Kevin Lee, who fought for the title by doing it. Henry Cejudo, who had, I've lost track, but is it six in total title fights? He has six title fights in total, might have had seven, eight. I'm getting eight over here by one producer, the point is. And they're the only three guys to do it. Nobody else has ever done it. Now you got to figure out what it is, but I'm giving you all of the clues. So Colby goes onto a yacht and he's cutting a promo against Ian Gary. And he basically told Ian that I will do the fight. You're going to have to beg me. I will do the fight. I will give you what you asked for. I have three simple stipulations. And then he goes from there. And I mean, one, and then the next. They're brutal, guys. There's a reason I'm not a prude, and I'm not telling you what they are. You have to go look them up. They're brutal. Why was that important? Why do I mention that? Well, last time Colby had a microphone, last time he was at a press conference, It created a whole lot of ways on what is allowed and what isn't. All the way down to Errol Hawani was discussing if there should be a regulatory board that decides what can be said and what can't be said. I mean, is that big of a deal that it became a topic with the top journalist in the entire sport? Now, at a minimum, what are we going to get coming out of that? Well, lesson learned. Of course, lesson learned. We don't have to slap him on the hands or anything else. Colby pays attention. Lesson learned. He won't do that again. Oh, he did it again. Oh, yeah, he did it again. And that's what was so... That's why it was great. You can never buckle when they tell you to buckle. You can never apologize when they tell you to apologize. I mean, there is a PR lesson going on here between the two of them. Don't act like Colby's in the spot that he wants to be. He doesn't want to be the guy that's knocked out. He wants to be the champion of the world. So how's he going to come back from that? Well, he's going to create really big things. And he's only tried one so far, and it worked. Here we are discussing it. I saw it discussed on ESPN 3 hours ago. Good guy and the bad guy discussed it over there. As a matter of fact, I think it was called round two. And my point is simply this for you. Before we get in the X's and O's, if you're going for callouts, and if you're going for can I get it, if you're going for a match, and if you're called out, how you're going to navigate that, right? I mean, there's a number of things at play here. I like Gilbert versus Colby, but I will acknowledge that Gary versus Colby has something special too. And I can't think of Gary versus anybody else that's got that built-in feature. I think that there is some legs to it. I think if these guys are very legitimate behind the scenes when that phone rings, or if they're proactive and they're on the phone themselves saying, give me this guy, and the other guy says the same thing, I think we could have a fight between Ian Gary and Colby Covington. Right, guys, this is it. Tyson versus Jake Paul. This is the one. Right here. I will put this in the thumbnail. Beautiful picture of the two. You guys engage. You give the thumbs. You give the comments. I get some views. Or we're out. This is the test. I used to make so much money with Jake Paul. I used to make so much money with Mike Tyson. And perhaps, guys, we still can. Perhaps I've got my thumb off it. Now, there's things within an industry that we would never reveal. You never expose the business, never. And that's becoming harder and harder because there's fewer and fewer things that are still aren't exposed, right? Very, very few things haven't made it out of the day. Social media used to be able to keep all sorts of information. But there are things, and we don't expose the business. I'm not going to change that now. But if those things come out, why is this fight in Texas, by example? Okay, there. It's what I'm not going to say is that what you need to hear right now. If that comes out and that makes headwaves, this fight, the balloon that is this fight just gets popped. So, I mean, I'm just taking a look at it. I'm not against it. I'm not hating on this. I'm testing right now. I'm testing what your guys' temperature is because my prediction is it's not good. That's my prediction. But there is an opportunity to exposure on different levels. And that exposure can be directly tied to the success of a fight. You'll get guys that come out and they want to be a promotion. So many guys have wanted to co-promote with Dana. And Dana's never been a dick about it, regardless of how people like to say. He said the same thing consistently. What is it that you're going to do? If we're co-promoting, here's what I'm going to bring. I need to know what you're going to bring. And they should kind of look the same in terms of how big and how much there are. And nobody has come to me offering to do that. So why would I co-promote? And then people will quickly, that don't know the business and forget that it even is a business, will quickly go, well, because that's the only way that you can get this match versus this match. No, that's not how this works. No, if you would like to release your guy to me, I could make the match, or you could rent my guy out for the day. But no, we're not partners here. I built something you haven't. It's just the reality, right? So what I'm attempting to share is you will get guys that find one another, and they'll be smart enough to go down to the good folks in Utah and get themselves an EIN number. Come out, tell you that they're a promoter and they're a promotion and they're in business. But what is their distribution? And who are their partners throughout the media? That's the only thing you're going to need to know. Now, they're going to want you to believe I've got this guy and this guy. And the first time you hear it, you're going to think that's a pretty good idea. The problem is, you're not going to hear it again because they don't have anybody to say it to you. So I'm bringing that piece to you that Tyson and Jake Paul have very meaningful reach in terms of Rolodexes. They can get some very meaningful exposure. And there is room, business-wise, in this industry to have fun. We don't do it very often, but we can admit we do like to do it, right? I mean, it's usually a high stress, and it's this versus that, and there's some push and pull, and I mean, all the way down to we're going to see what he weighs, and if he's 1 gram over, we're going to cancel the whole damn thing. I mean, right? Like, it gets really intense generally. So we're open to having a little fun, but that's a hard story to tell. And you would need two very good performers to go out there and tell it. Vince McMahon, for WrestleMania, to headline the whole thing, will not turn to the best. And how do you want to define that? The strongest, the most experienced, the fastest, the most cunning, the most dedicated, the most disciplined? I mean, how do you want to define what best is in that? But Vince isn't even looking for it anyway. He's going to turn to two performers that he can count on, that in a 7-week build period have a history of being able to build and storytell and find a way to work. It's an extremely important concept, because this fight happens to have that. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, they're going to be given an ample opportunity. I'm just wondering, where do you think that's going to go? And there's only a couple of places that it could go. And Jake Paul has done everything so incredibly well. You know what I wish? You know what I wish? Fantasy of mine. This would be a fantasy game. But if I could make it happen, we'll go look. We'll print it out. We'll just get a look, timeline-wise, of Jake Paul's time within boxing. From going to England to dealing with KSI to coming back here to all the interviews that he did to being undercard talent for Jones versus Tyson, opposite a basketball player, to get into actual fighters like Ben Askren, to go into world champions like Tyron Woodley. I mean, I'm just sharing with you. I just wish that we could print that out. Have you give it a look? And you're gonna look at, and you're gonna, oh gosh, he did this so well. Oh, that was so smart. Oh, this guy's brilliant. Now I'm going to start showing you the numbers, too. I'm going to show you the gates. I'm going to show you sold out. I'm going to show you about the time he was bringing over a boxer who wasn't even good at boxing, but his brother was famous, and his dad was great at a press conference, and they had a $1 million gate waiting for him at Madison Square Garden. And don't think you have to tell me how that story ended. You're going to look at that on the timeline and go, golly, Jake Paul is great. But then I wish, and see, that would be very easy to do. I could do that on the internet right now. I could pull that up. I could pull that timeline up, put it right in front of you. What I can't do is find a way to get a timeline for your reaction while it happened. Because while you would sit back, all of you, and go, oh, Jake Paul, you're so good at the, wow. At the time that he was doing it, it's not what you were saying. You were telling him to change. You were being a critic. You were putting him down. But you've forgotten. You've forgotten that those were your reactions. Okay, great. Now, what can we do with Tyson? And there's only so many things that Tyson can do, right? Like, Tyson can't flip. We have so many guys. They're young guys. They're up. They're coming. They're going to go this direction. They're going to turn over here. They're going to flip back this way. They're gonna, right? There's a strategy and there's a plan. When you're 57 years old and you're retired, and this isn't to lead to something else, to lead to something else. I'm playing a different game if I'm Mike Tyson, which is just this night. I'm playing checkers against a chess player. Like, it's one of these spots where it's not the Vince McMahon model. It's not the Vince McMahon where I've got two proven performers. Mike has something. It's very special. But I'm just wondering how he's going to do it and what is it that he's going to do. It's not like Mike needs this to stick. Like, if you're in the fight game, what I'm going to do tonight is going to demonstrate my ability to get my quote on my next night. So that's part of my incentive, to do really good numbers here so that I can get my quote for the next one. If my numbers right here come down, I'm not going up to my quote. I mean, do you understand the difference? But Mike has no incentive to have great numbers because he's not going on to another. I'm just stating some of the conflicts you're going to have, ways to work through it. I'm open to it. I hope I'm telling you the story. I hope that they do well. I hope that there's a little bit more to it. But Mike has come out. He's only done one thing so far. He said he signed the contract. Talking about Jake Paul, he said he signed the contract. So the problem child's got a problem. Decent line. It's a decent line. The person that fed Mike the line or thought it was even a good idea to film the line, like, that person hasn't done anything wrong yet. In fact, they've done a couple of things that are helpful. Once they have the ability to see how it came off and whether it was authentic and or not, once they have the ability to see it and they then make the decision to put it out, now you have a problem. So I'm still open to this idea. I really am. I'm open to hearing the card. Any problems that you have with Tyson and Jake, right? There's a level of interest. I'm talking about the problem for the people that have a problem with it. All of those can still be stitched up and solved with the rest of your card. Every complaint that you want, there's still room. And I'm still open to it, but this is the test. You guys like this or you don't, that's up to you. Mark Coleman, oh guys, I tried to bring you this story yesterday, it came out yesterday, and I called Wes Sims, I got Wes's voicemail. I had a hard time talking about this yesterday. This one was a really tough one for me. So, I'm trying to think of where I want to start this. I think I want to start you off on third base. Okay, here's third base. The headline that I read does not look good for Mark Coleman. Now, he is in the ICU, intensive care unit. He's in a coma. So, I believe that that was induced by the hospital either way. When they say it doesn't look good, they're saying is that Coleman is going to lose this battle, which means he's going to lose his life. Now, I want to start you there on third base, okay? All right, timeout. Let's back up. Let me get you to first. Mark Coleman's asleep. His dog, named Hammer, comes and wakes him up. Now, Mark is just in the sweet spot of a process of rebirth and a reintroduction to health. You heard Brian Ortega talking about it and use the example of the eagle. Well, Mark Coleman's doing the same thing. He's sober. He's exercising. He's back on social media. He's coming to you guys. He's coming to you guys so that you keep him accountable. He's showing you himself each day and his progress. You probably don't even know how helpful and important you are to Mark Coleman's journey back, at any rate. Hammer wakes him up and woke him up because the house was on fire. So Mark Coleman goes right at burning house and the whole family sleeping. So the dog woke Mark up. Mark's got to go get dad, get him outside, and go back in for mom. Now, when Mark is going back in for mom, the hair is already burnt off of his body. The house is so hot and so fire, it's already burned. It's more so now, and he's headed back in. He saves mom. He gets her. He gets her to the yard. He goes back in for the dog. And that's where they found him. They found him inside. When hospitals got there and when emergency crews got there, they got the fire contained a little bit and somebody got inside. There was Mark, unconscious on the floor from smoke ventilation. And that's a hard one. That'll kill you. And one of the reasons that'll kill you is because then you can't get out. So then you keep breathing that smoke, which means you're not breathing in anything, right? Fire kills oxygen. Fire must have oxygen in case you ever went. That's why you can put a blanket over a fire if you put it completely, put the fire out. Okay, great. So he's unconscious when they get him. He's unconscious now. The difference is he's in care. He saved his parents. God, I hope he saved that dog. You know, they didn't put that in the story. I know Mark didn't care the dog, but I'm hoping, man, that dog found his way out. And you're just in a really tough spot. Like, any parent would die to save their kid. It's not even a close call. They would want it. If it didn't happen that way and they had to go on living knowing their child died, say they wouldn't even want it. It's not what they would want. But this child is different. This child is special. And this child saved the parents instead of the other way around. And so now I got you to third base. Got you back where we started. And I take extreme umbrage with this. The headline says it's not looking good for Mark Coleman. And I must tell you, I don't have stats and I don't have data. I don't have a friend that I can tell you about that's been in this position where I got a little bit of insight on it. But if anybody has ever come through this and they still believe it doesn't look good for Mark Coleman, if anybody has ever been in this spot and or worse and come back, and you think that person was tougher than the guy that had all the hair burned off his body but went through the house saving lives anyway. That's before we get into the NCAA champion. It's before we get into the 1992 Olympian. That's before I tell you that in 1991 he was a world finalist. Something he never talks about is a silver medal. He was the second on earth, but that was a disappointment to him, so he never talked about it. Before we get into the UFC champion, before I get into the Pride Grand Prix winner, before I get into any of this tough guy stuff, because that's nothing. That's the NCAA champion. That is nothing compared to the guy that ran through fire and went back into it willingly for a non-human's life. And somebody that wrote the article isn't sure he's going to come through this. I just want to remind you who you're dealing with. We knew he was one of the baddest men on earth. Being the baddest man on earth, being the toughest, are very different. It's a very different conversation. One knows aggression. Take a guy down and headbutt him, pound him till the referee says stop. That's aggression. A fighter is something different. A fighter is the one that has to deal with the aggression. Mark Coleman is one tough son of a bitch. And if anybody has ever come back from this, you would be very, very naive to believe that this is going to hold down the hammer. All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. I want to give a shout out to Garcia, who left me a review on Apple Podcasts that says you have the best postcard for MMA. Well, I'm not completely sure what that means, Garcia, but I assume it's a compliment, and I thank you. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We will meet back here on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.